Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Successful media and public affairs consultant, accomplished entrepreneur and national writer and contributor, attorney who served in the Missouri House of Representatives, worked in the White House and CNN, thought leader, entrepreneur, and host who takes the conversation to the next level.
Prepare to get rare access to fascinating guests.
You're connected. You have the it factor. You've joined
Grill Nation.
Everybody over there.
Get a hold of. Everybody up there.
Get into it.
Ooh-way.
Connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason Grill. Connect with the show on Twitter at Grill Nation Show. And online at grillnationshow.com.
Welcome your host of Grill Nation. Always dressed up and ready to go, even in a radio studio. Here's Jason Grill.
Hello and welcome to the Grill Nation Show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. I appreciate you listening today on 980 AM and on iTunes. If you're joining us via podcast today, we appreciate it. Or if you're listening or joining us on the web at grillnationshow.com. Appreciate you joining us each and every week on the show. We've had a lot of fun shows recently, and this one will be very similar. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to learn a lot, and we're going to meet a really cool person here in Kansas City. You connect with me on Twitter at Jason Grill, and I'm on social media. Just search for my name, Jason Grill, on Instagram, Facebook, and on Snapchat. I want to thank our partners and supporters of the show before we bring in our guests today. Supporters of the Grill Nation show include title sponsors, which are Truss and MoBank, BOK Financial, Two West Advisors, and also we have contributors to the show, which include the KCADC, Kansas City Area Development Council, thanks to Tim Cowden. Poor KC, thanks to John Stevens, and Brian Sarf from True Wealth and Company is a guest host and on-air contributor. Thanks for all of the supporters and that help this show run each and every week. Okay, I want to bring in our guests for today's show. Dennis Strait is joining me. He's a principal at Gould Evans. They have been in Kansas City for many years, a great company here in Kansas City. He is an architect, planner, and landscape architect by trade. His interest is in city building and has an ability to recognize opportunities throughout the region. And he does a lot of city planning, and we're going to get into a really deep conversation today about performance-based cities. We're also going to learn more about what the company does. So I want to welcome to the show Dennis Strait, principal at Gould Evans. Thanks for coming on the show today, Dennis.
Jason, thanks for having me. That sounds like a fun conversation.
It's going to be a lot of fun. First off, let's learn about you, because we had lunch. Julie Nelson Mears connected us about a month or two ago. Time flies in Kansas City. I remember it was starting to get a little warmer outside. You know, we had lunch and we kind of talked about your background. For our listeners, give us a little background. I know you went to got your master's at UT. Is that right?
I did. And from a kid from Oklahoma, that was kind of tough for the old parents, right?
Yeah, right.
I came out of Oklahoma, started in landscape architecture, moved down to Austin, Texas for a few years, primarily working for architects and fixing all the mistakes they were making, and I decided to become an architect. So mm-hmm. That's where I got the master's at UT, and the economy was pretty tough down there, and it was a tough place to do business. So for a lot of reasons, we decided to move to Kansas City, and that's been 30-plus years ago. So Kansas City is definitely home now.
And what was your impression of Kansas City when you showed up here? Probably the early 90s, probably, I assume, right? 30 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, always loved the Midtown area, and certainly the city is a city. So unlike where I grew up, where you didn't really have a sense of a city. In fact, unfortunately, the city where I grew up in, they tore down the city downtown in urban renewal back in the 60s, and I can still remember that happening. So we essentially removed the urban part of our city, and I grew up in a suburb without an herb, and that's been probably plaguing me my entire life in terms of trying to get back to those things that make cities really what they are.
So you came to Kansas City and you located kind of in the corridor, the heart of the city when you first got here?
Yeah, we've lived in like five or six places all within like a six block radius over the last 30 years.
That's interesting. I always find it interesting to see how people located here and what their first impressions were of the city. So you came here, and what happened next? I mean, did you, you started at your company? Did you kind of work your way up? Did you found it? Did you work at other places? What happened? Because you've been there for a while, right? At Cool Devins.
Yeah, quite a while now. I started out looking for jobs with architects, and I was an experienced landscape architect, and most architects didn't know what to do with me, and it took, took 6 months before I landed a position, and frankly, the position I landed was with a planning firm. Mm. Which wasn't what I was trying to do. I was trying to move on into architecture, but a guy named Ralph Oshner, who was a city planner who'd bought the old Hare and Hare planning firm and was doing some really interesting work, he offered me a position and worked with Ralph for 3 years. Along the way, we did a lot of collaboration with Glenn LeRoy, who was a principal with Gould Evans at the time. Glenn and I got to know each other, and Glenn recruited me over to Gould Evans to help start a landscape architecture studio and also to help with the architectural practice, and that's what got me into architecture finally.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about Gould Evans, since you've been there now and you are the principal. Tell us about the company and what it does and how you help businesses and people throughout this region and throughout the country.
Yeah, one of many principals. I'll start out with that. We started in the 70s in Lawrence, Kansas. Bob and Dave started the firm there, and in the 80s, Bob moved over to Kansas City and started a Kansas City studio. And today we have studios in New Orleans and Phoenix and San Francisco. We have over 160 people. The majority of us are still here in the Kansas City and Lawrence offices, about half of us. And we are a planning and design firm. Mm-hmm. We've since the beginning, we've always had a focus in education. We've done a lot of workplace projects over the years, and we've been involved in a variety of other things. The firm's done a lot of civic work, and does a lot of planning assignments too. So we have a diverse practice.
You guys are involved in the kind of the community and or not charity, but community and civic organizations in progress, but also have your business as well. I feel like you're very involved with entrepreneurs and with people as well as doing the day-to-day to pay the bills of the company. It seems like that's a focus for you guys to focus on two different things.
We tried to find that blend where we can take the expertise we developed through our practice and use it to help build a stronger community. We have for the last 4 years, we've had an active classroom in the studio, which is very unusual for any business to have kids coming in on an almost daily basis. It's a joint program with the Department of Education at Rutgers University. Mm. And it's an out-of-school program that allows kids an opportunity to learn how to be self-directed learners. Mm. And frankly offers teachers the opportunity to learn how to guide self-directed learning outside the classroom. And part of the reason that it's been successful in our office is that it gives kids a totally different atmosphere to work in. And that changes their perspective and ultimately helps to change their engagement.
You have a new office location, right?
We do.
Tell us about that.
We're thrilled to be in a brand new location in our old home of Westport. Mm-hmm. We've been in Westport for 23 years. When we moved into Westport, we renovated the old Manor Square Shopping Center into a workplace, and it was funky and cool and a great space for us for many years, but it got tired, and we were needing to either renovate or move. Renovation was going to be painful, and we didn't want to move out of Westport, and it took us about a year to finally locate the office, which was two blocks down from where we were. Mm-hmm. We'd done a full renovation on one of the last historic buildings in the Westport area, and it's become a great home for us.
Mm-hmm. It's got all of the modern amenities, doesn't it? Beautiful architecture. You guys obviously know how to do that stuff. So cool studios. It's going to be a cool place to check out. And I'm sure everyone has driven past it at some point if they've been to Westport, right? It's very, very, very right there.
we're enjoying it quite a bit. We still think Westport's, like Kansas City is nationally, Westport's kind of a secret in Kansas City in terms of a great place to have a business because of all the amenity it offers to the daytime business community.
Love it. Dennis Strait is our guest today from Gould Evans. You can check them out at gouldevans.com. We're going to be right back with more Grill Nation. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show. I appreciate you listening again today on 980 AM or on iTunes via podcast or at our website, grillnationshow.com. I'm going to post photos of our guests today, and also you can find all of our old shows. We've done over 205 shows since we've rebranded as the Grill Nation Show. They're all on the website at grillnationshow.com. Joined today by Dennis Strait, who's a principal at Gould Evans in Kansas City. Their website is Gould, that's GouldEvans.com. Really interesting company here in Kansas City, and really going to get into some interesting topics here on this segment. Dennis, welcome back to the show. When we met for lunch with Julie Nelson Mears, we were talking about all about city planning, about Kansas City setup, about, you know, what are our challenges moving forward? What have we done well? What do we need to improve on? All things that I get really jazzed up about as a guy that loves the city and wants to make it a better place and wants to keep growing and keep accelerating and keep doing the right things. We talked about performance-based cities. Explain to us what those are and what you mean by that, because I know that that's something you have done a lot of work on and you know a lot about. So tell us what that is.
Well, we've been planners for most of the life of the firm.
Mm-hmm.
For the past few years, we've started trying to help cities look at themselves in a different way. a lot of what we have to deal with the communities is the complexity that we've created
mm-hmm.
Over the last 75 years and how we try and plan and regulate and guide cities. So we're trying to create simplicity in the discussion and to focus cities on this new way of looking at themselves in such a way so they can build value and be able to do all the things that that people want their cities to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting to call it this performance-based approach because it is looking at your city like Joe Menicazzi, one of our mentors, is used to talking about cities as farms. And if you think about your city as a farm and you're the farmer, you quickly learn which parts of your farm are most productive and which are least productive. And you're very careful to protect those productive areas. And you're very careful about how you manage those non-productive areas. And you can look at your city the same way. And you can identify, which parts of your overall acreage are generating revenue and which parts aren't generating so much revenue. Some of that's pretty obvious in terms of vacant land, but others isn't so obvious. And once you start looking at it, it gives you a new lens to help guide your thinking about where you focus your resources. And in a time when our resources aren't adequate to meet all of our wishes, that's an important place to start.
You mentioned the farm analogy in that description of a performance-based city and why you care about that. Why is measuring value by the acre more important than measuring value by the property as we do now in our city throughout the country as well?
So, again, try and keep this simple.
And I'll just tell our listeners, Dennis, we talked about this before and I didn't come up with that genius question myself. So I was never good at when I was politician. I was always afraid to go run for office in the St. Joe or the Buchanan County area because I'd have to learn more about farming, and that is not my strong point. So your analogy was interesting, but seriously.
We'll both be in trouble. It goes much deeper than that.
Tell us about the analogy, or tell us more about why you should value by an acre and not by the value of the property.
So we're going to focus the discussion on infrastructure, mm-hmm. something as glamorous as infrastructure and as current as the infrastructure discussion. Because if you look at cities at their investments, if you look at the infrastructure investment or as an investment, that's mm-hmm. That's one of the primary things that a city has to manage, maintain, and that it offers to the private sector, which is really what builds the value in the community. The city just provides that network that the private sector plugs into and provides value mm-hmm. and provides all the wonderful things that we think of in terms of the diversity that creates Kansas City. So when you look at your infrastructure network and you look at how much revenue it's generating, again, similar to a farm, and you measure that revenue against how much infrastructure investment you have, you can start to see some interesting features.
Mm.
So one way we started looking at or having or asking people to consider their city is to look at your city prior to 1950 and after 1950, because that was a threshold moment in most cities around the country. And it largely has to do with moving away from the period in our history when we built cities around people and what it took to move around as individuals, into an era now where for the past 75 years we've built cities based on cars, or maybe people in cars, but primarily cars, and what that allows you to do in terms of how you can spread out and access resources. Mm-hmm. And obviously allows you to spread out quite a bit more because you can get somewhere a lot faster in a car in 5 minutes than you can on foot. The ability or the need to cluster has become less important, and that's encouraged us to take advantage of the space we have and spread out and utilize that new mode of transportation. What we didn't necessarily realize along the way was that we were starting to invest in infrastructure in a dramatically different way than we ever had in the history of city building. So now we have cities with a substantially higher amount of infrastructure per resident than we used to build. Mm-hmm. And if you look at cities prior to 1950 and post 1950, you can pretty clearly see that change in pattern. And if you measure cities pre-1950 and post-1950, you start finding things like we were sharing this at the speaker series last year, that since 1950, Kansas City has grown almost four times in size. Now, we went from a city of around 80 square miles to a city of now almost 320 square miles. We are still the same size of population in Kansas City, Missouri, as we were back in 1950. But we're occupying a lot more ground and requiring a lot more streets and infrastructure to get to all that ground. Mm-hmm. And we're occupying at a much lower intensity than we occupied pre-1950 Kansas City. So having that, if you start measuring your city by this per acre basis, since you're building infrastructure to cover all that acreage, and if you measure it by acre and measure your return on your investments in terms of the property taxes that those acreages are generating, we'll call that the crops if you want to, mm-hmm. You get a much higher yield in the more intensely used portion of the city, which turns out to be those parts of the city built before 1950, which were built at more of a human scale. So it's our midtowns, downtowns, our central neighborhoods. Then you do post 1950, where we spread out and we were building at the scale of that you could reach with an automobile.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kansas City has got to be one of the most spread out cities there is in the country as far as a middle sized to large sized city. I mean, they're just 320 square miles, you said. Most cities aren't that big. I mean, let's be honest, right?
Right. And it's.
And that causes a lot more pressure to. You know, to fix things, right? And less money to do it with budget. You mentioned the same amount of people, or roughly. We've grown a little bit. I think we had 3,000 new people last year. But my point is, it's not growing at a Nashville pace where you have 150 people a day moving there.
Right.
And so, you know, how do we pay for all this extended infrastructure? And you mentioned 380 versus 320. I mean, think about 80 square miles of fixing and updating and keeping things happening versus 320. It's a lot.
I suspect, and I'm not ready to defend this, but I suspect we could point to all of our problems based on just that one dynamic. The one fact that we changed from an 80-mile city to a 320-mile city in terms of the simple things like infrastructure, but also police protection and even education. It's all affected by how much we spread ourselves out and spread out our resources.
Mm-hmm.
Then
Dennis Strait is with us, principal at Gould Evans. A couple more minutes in the segment. You mentioned your speaker series in your last comments. And what is that, and why did your company start that?
We approached Crosby Kemper with the Kansas City Public Library now a year and a half ago with this idea of having a speaker series that looked at this issue of performance-based city planning. And he was supportive of the idea, so we had three speakers come in individually on an every other month basis from January through into the late spring. Our first speaker was a gentleman who's more or less led this discussion about looking at your cities from a performance-based perspective. His name is Charles Barone. He's a born-again traffic engineer, city planner, who realized that most of the work he'd done for the first half of his life in his career was not really generating value. It was generating liabilities, and it wasn't being built efficiently, and he was getting frustrated by that. So he started this movement that has since become known as the Strong Towns Movement, which helps people understand what we've built over the last 75 years and the challenges it's created. Our second speaker was an architect, urban designer, real estate developer from Asheville, North Carolina. Joe Menikazi has a practice, a studio he calls Urban 3, who's become one of the best urban storytellers around, who really helps us understand how cities can be productive in terms of the development that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And he compares things that you know, most people would not have expected to commercial buildings that have been around since 1910 that, you know, look like they're barely operating. You know, they're still occupied, but they're not a thriving business necessarily. Compares that to a Walmart, and when you, or any big box store, and when mm-hmm. you compare that on a per acre basis, which again is the measure we should be worrying about, because mm-hmm. it's a measure of where we can truly find return on the investment in infrastructure. When you compare those things, you find that those little stores in our central city areas are generating a lot more value for our city than those things that we think are generating.
That's an interesting point. I want to lead with that here after the break. We're with Dennis Strait today from Gould Evans. You're listening to Grill Nation.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show, 980 AM and on iTunes via podcast and at grillnationshow.com. Appreciate you listening today and always every week. Very fascinating interview so far with Dennis Strait, principal at Gould Evans. Check their website out at gouldevans.com. Great firm here in Kansas City, architect. He's done a lot of things with architect, landscape architect, planning. We're talking about development, and you were mentioning your speaker series. Let's just briefly talk again about why you did that, and maybe you wanted to mention one of the other speakers that came into town as well.
So it was primarily to start the discussion here in Kansas City about this different way of looking at cities mm-hmm. in terms of the performance basis of considering your city. As we were developing this program, I met with David Borm of the Mid-America Regional Council and described the first two speakers, and David's counsel was that, you know, that's going to be very depressing. Do you have any suggestions about where we go from here? And could you provide a speaker that would give us some insights there? Which led us to our third speaker was with the Incremental Development Alliance. Mm-hmm. It was their national director, Jim Kuhman, who came to town to help underscore the importance of small development to the ecosystem of a city. Small development being anything from a single family home to a duplex, a triplex, a multiplex, a small commercial building, but the kinds of buildings that create our neighborhoods, which we used to build naturally. But again, over this last 75 years, we've lost track of that natural way of building and created systems of building and practices of building that focus more on projects that have just grown and grown in scale, which have very little to do with neighborhood building. They're more based on projects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's neighborhoods that create value in a city, and it's small development that creates neighborhoods. So the Incremental Development Alliance helped us understand that because we've ignored that important way of city building, we've created difficulties and challenges and hurdles for doing that way of city building. And we've really regulated ourselves into a way that we've not allowed ourselves to continue to build that value the way that we used to. So it was primarily a public information series to start a conversation.
Yeah. What's just fascinating about this is, you know, you typically, when you're talking about development, you're talking about the whole mainstream talk is now about incentives, right? We're not talking about incremental development or small scale development, why that's important. So it's interesting to hear that you guys took this on. And it's something you guys care about as a company. And why is that? Just because you want to change the world, or is it help in your business as well? I'm just curious about that.
So it's because we believe that Kansas City is a special place and has the potential to be a leading city in the future.
That's a positive thing to hear. I like hearing that. That's good to hear.
We do have some unique advantages.
What are some of those? From your perspective and what you do, I want to know.
Yeah, one of the unique advantages is that we're a big, small town. And anybody that comes here quickly recognizes that. So I get to go to monthly or regular chamber breakfast meetings, and they're introducing new people into town, new leaders of our local businesses. And to a T, the ones that come in from out of town are just sold almost instantly by how wonderful it is to become part of the Kansas City community and how easy it is to get to know people and to get engaged in your community. That's an incredible strength. That's an incredible positive for the city to go forward, because we have a way of engaging, which is a fundamental way of having a conversation and working through problems and finding solutions together. So there's a fundamental.
That's a positive, yeah.
We built a beautiful city thanks to George Kessler and to many of the efforts over the years. So we have a beautiful place. We might not have a mountain range like Denver or an ocean like Los Angeles, but we've got a beautiful place that we built that people recognize when they come here and get to enjoy, and we all get to enjoy. And frankly, our current situation is one that gives us a leg up on most other cities. The fact that we've allowed our city to disinvest over the last 75 years is a travesty. And the impact it's had on our entire community is something that, we're fortunately now trying to grapple with and move forward.
We do have a lot of advantages in Kansas City. It's great to hear those from Dennis Strait. Dennis, one of the issues that we keep hearing more and more about, at least locally and nationally, is affordable housing and how it is happening in our country and how it's happening in our city. And if Kansas City is affordable, is it not affordable? Talk to us about that, and then I want to get into how it relates to performance city-based strategy. So Kansas City is still affordable, right?
Well, compared to our aspirant cities, certainly.
What, Nashville, Portland, Austin's of the world that are doing this performance stuff?
Yeah. Those cities that we would aspire to be if we talked amongst ourselves. So we are affordable, but not for everybody. So there are affordable housing issues for significant portions of our population that we need to be addressing. We're also strapped for resources. And this gets back to the 320-mile city that we built, and how we spread ourselves too thin in terms of being able to afford all the things that we've promised and that we committed to. So this is a long-range attitude, this idea of performance-based cities. It won't immediately solve the affordable housing problem. We do have some new policies that the city's been pulling together that have some good ideas there that'll
help
us.
What are some of those?
Well,
I know you know this this council ordinance well.
There's a variety of things that ranges from educating, helping people understand how to own homes, to creating opportunities for accessibility to the homes that we have available in the city, and to build more homes in the city. There's bold ideas that are in that plan that talk about 5,000 homes in the next 4 years, and finding $75 million to create those homes. Or to help create those homes. And all those things are things we should be trying to do. The challenge is that $75 million is going to go fast. So we could spend all $75 million on new two-bedroom homes, and at the most economical way, we'd still only build about 400 homes.
That's not enough.
It's not nearly enough. And then we'd have to look for the next $75 million. And I know there's lots of different ways we could spend the $75 million, but the point is we don't just have $75 million laying around, because we are strapped in lots of ways with all the commitments we've made. So if we were to refocus our efforts so that we were really trying to nurture those portions of the city that are creating value for us, our central city, downtown, Westport, all those areas, managing those places which are costing us money every day, to minimize those costs so that we create more return on our infrastructure investments, we would have more resources to apply towards our critical needs, such as affordable housing. So that's how you would tie it in the long range back to the performance-based approach.
It's not a unique issue for Kansas City, though. It's happening all over the country.
Well, that's true. That's certainly true. We're just, I feel unique because we are at this point where we're starting to recognize the opportunity to reinvest in those areas that we've disinvested in over the last 75 years. And we know a lot more now about the problems that we've created. And there are lots of cities dealing with this. We can apply good strategies to build back a city that not only creates affordable housing and accessibility to housing for all segments of the population, but also does that in a sustainable way. Mm-hmm. So it's an important threshold that we're at for the city, and one that I think we're well positioned to take advantage of.
You mentioned other cities. What it would be surprising to know what cities are doing well with this and with performance-based strategy. And shockingly, it's probably somebody very close to here, isn't it?
Yeah. And in terms of,
we were talking about this in an earlier off-air area, so I wanted to make sure the listeners know that good stuff's happening on the other side of the river.
I am very encouraged by the direction that the unified government is going with the guidance of their city building.
KCK, for all those who don't.
Yeah, KCK has adopted many of these performance-based strategies, working with the Strong Towns organization, working with Joan Manicazzi's Urban 3 group, and with their own staff, making some very intelligent decisions about where they can see good investments, good valuable portions of the city that could be more valuable with the right guidance and nudging. And they're starting to put more emphasis in those parts of the city. Again, they're not trying to abandon the rest of the city. They're just trying to build a more healthy city through the resources that they have and the assets that they have.
Because they're kind of enforced to, right? There's other cities that maybe waited too long.
Well, that gets back to the Detroit example we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Chuck Marone with Strong Towns describes Detroit as not an anomaly, but as early. And trying to help people understand that Detroit's an outcome of the lack of attention towards this attitude of performance and the problems we've created for our cities throughout the country through this spread out way of building for cars and for the last 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Detroit is now a national model of what we all want to avoid. Kansas City doesn't feel anything close to Detroit, but there are many parts of the UG that do feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they are at a point where it's a necessity to start, doing what they can to move their city forward. So I'm inspired by them, and I hope we as a city here in Kansas City can be inspired by them, because we don't need to wait until we get to that point to start making more intelligent decisions about how we guide our city forward. We could follow that pattern now.
Very interesting stuff. We're going to be back for one final segment with Dennis Strait from Gould Evans. After the break, I want to talk to him about what Kansas City can do to improve its performance next. I want to talk about some hot zones in this city and some potential areas that we'll be developing in this performance-based city strategy soon. And also, I'd like to know more about why our poorest neighborhoods are subsidizing our most affluent neighborhoods, and how is this possible with everything else going on in today's society and in Kansas City. And hopefully we'll get some more good tidbits from Dennis Strait, principal at Gould Evans' website. Their website is gouldevans.com. Thanks for joining us today on the Grill Nation Show on 980 AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show, 980 AM. Thanks for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it. I'm your host, Jason Grill. We're with Dennis Strait today, principal at Gould Evans. The website is gouldevans.com. Cool website. You can learn more about what they do and their practice and what they've done throughout the country and read more about what they're doing in the community. Dennis, a lot of things Kansas City needs to do to improve its performance. We've talked about investing in infrastructure. One of the questions I have is, what do we do next? What do we need to develop next? Where should we go next? What should we be putting our resources into, our investment into? What part of the city should we be doing that in?
Well, probably three steps. First step is as we look at our city and understand where it's performing well,
mm-hmm.
we also are going to understand where it's not performing well, and let's stop doing those things. So let's stop the bleeding. That would be the first step. The second step is to start to use the city that we have more effectively. And you'll see quickly when you look at performance-based city assessment, the most valuable portions of the city are the pre-1950s portions of the city that were built at a scale where the return on the infrastructure investment is greater because the intensity of development is greater. It's mm-hmm. a pretty simple formula. So we ought to be reinvesting in our central city neighborhoods. We ought to be reinvesting as we can, certainly with downtown, but throughout Midtown. We've got a lot of opportunity throughout the 1950s portion of Kansas City. We could continue to grow at the rate we're growing now for another 40 years and not build anything outside the original 1950 boundaries. So there's plenty of opportunity to build in those parts of the cities that create the greatest return on investment in terms of property tax per square foot or square acre.
Where's our hot zones at? You mentioned to me off air, you have a map that shows the red zones of where the most economic development is, or activity is, excuse me. Our listeners, where are those?
So Joe Minicasi showed us how to create these value per acre assessments, mm-hmm. and you can pretty simply do those for your city. And when we did it for Kansas City, it shows, in terms of a heat map, a burning hot zone that runs from the river down to 85th Street, from State Line over to Troost. And that is the economic engine of Kansas City. That's where our most valuable properties are. Not necessarily the most valuable homes, but the most valuable collection of properties within a very urban, again, pre-1950s scale. So
your argument, you should be investing right there.
You should certainly be taking care of that precious resource. Again, back to the farm analogy, that's your most productive crop. So you ought to be making sure that it's continuing to thrive and do well. Mm-hmm. The surprising thing is when you look on the other side of that state line of Troost, and you look at those same square miles, those same 12 square miles or so, or 16 square miles, you find that there's a dramatic change in property value. Mm-hmm. And we all would expect that. It's sure. about 5 to 10 times the change of what you would see on the west side of Troost.
Just a couple blocks over.
Just a couple blocks over. What we don't expect is when you compare that red hot part of Kansas City to our newer neighborhoods that were built since 1950.
In Kansas City, Missouri?
Oh, I'm staying completely within Kansas City, Missouri for this discussion. When you compare our central city to our outlying areas, mm-hmm. you see 10 to 50 times the value in the central city. That might surprise some people because we see some very affluent neighborhoods and we think that's great value. When you look at the return on investment side of things, the amount of property tax you're generating per amount of infrastructure you've invested, you actually find some surprising things. You start to see that there are many areas in our east of Troost neighborhoods where on a value per acre basis, again, the way that you can measure performance for a city, you're seeing more value than what we would think to be our wealthy neighborhoods. Some of our wealthy neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the central city.
Right, on the edges of our city. Mm-hmm. Most people don't see the city that way. But once you start understanding the city that way, you can start to understand where you can build value and where you're building liabilities. And that's an important step forward towards a performance-based city.
How does your ideas, your studies, your maps, how does that work with people that think that it's time to spend more and invest more east of Troost? Because it's been the east side has been underappreciated for all these years, according to many people in City Hall and the media and whatnot.
Yeah, we are definitely at a threshold. That red line, the red line of Troost, mm-hmm. Which is still pretty evident in that heat map of the city, has breaks. There are already areas where development is spilling over beyond that red line. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly momentum building in the city towards looking now at the east side as a rebuilding opportunity and all the displacement concerns that come along with it. And it's conversations we need to have. So it's great that we're having those conversations. It's an important time to be thoughtful about how we reinvest in those neighborhoods in ways that don't create displacement, do create wealth building for the existing communities, and do create sustainable value. The interesting thing about east of Troost is it's the exact same development pattern as west of Troost. Same housing stock, same street blocks, same amenities, It's just been artificially segregated. Mm-hmm. So it's got the same fundamental infrastructure and building blocks for city building that our best productive part of the city has. So it can and will become, once again, a very productive part of the city, and easily could become as valuable as the rest of our central city areas, and could become part of that economic engine that drives our city forward.
That's interesting. One of the things I wanted to hit on real quick is how do our poorest neighborhoods subsidize our most affluent neighborhoods? How does that work? How is that possible?
It's back to that that looking at value differently. Even though the home values are less, you know, you look at homes in newer subdivisions that are easily north of $250,000, and you look at homes in our east of Truce neighborhoods, and you can find them in the $50,000 range. Mm-hmm. So you think about, well, that's the value disparity. We've got these great values out in these neighborhoods, and we've got these poor disinvested neighborhoods in the central city. But when you look at that on a per acre basis, you realize you have many more of those $50,000 homes per block, per acre, mm-hmm. than you do when you measure the acreage you've dedicated to those more expensive homes.
Yeah.
So because of that, the tax generation, the property tax generation in some of our poor neighborhoods is actually greater per acre. So it's greater proportion of their occupied part of our city than some of the more apparently affluent parts of our city.
That's interesting. I think my mind just did a somersault there, trying to fit that all in perspective.
No, I'm sorry about that.
We've got to get that to the mainstream. We got to keep doing speaker series at Gould Evans, because I think if we told Quinn Lucas that or other people, they'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. It makes sense when you really think about it. And you don't hear many people that are making these decisions talking like that, which is really cool to hear you say that, which is why we need more people to check out what you guys are doing at Gould Evans at gouldevans.com. And also, I'm sure you guys will have more events and hopefully more informational sessions as we get going on performance-based cities, the strategy, what places are doing well, and just looking at these maps would be really interesting.
Let me give a shout-out to one of our planners in our studio. Abby Kinney has started the first unofficial chapter of the Incremental Development Alliance here in Kansas City. For the past 5 months, we've been meeting monthly at Charlie Hooper's and assembling folks interested in this smaller scale of development to help build a network of small scale developers. Butch Rigby was our speaker last night. Mm-hmm. We're continuing to build momentum there, and it's a great place for people interested in rebuilding our city to plug in.
Very interesting stuff. Dennis Strait has been our guest. He's a principal at Gould Evans. I want to thank everyone for listening today. And Dennis, thanks for coming on the air today and sharing some of these interesting tidbits and facts. And it's really an interesting way to think about how our cities are growing and what they should be investing in. So thanks for coming on the show.
Jason, thanks for caring about our city.
I do care. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week here on Grill Nation.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.